Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Full-on quantum computing is a mind-bending, as yet unachieved, computing accomplishment. We just can't really do it yet. But the NSA is trying. Its goal, to be able to walk past any password or cryptography on the internet beyond. It's not pie in the sky. Documents from former NSA contractor, now leaker in exile, Edward Snowden, describe a real, funded effort at a quantum computing breakthrough. What if they, or someone else, succeeds? This hour on Point, the NSA, quantum computing, and the future of cryptography. Joining me first today is Stephen Rich, database editor for Investigations at the Washington Post. He co-authored the piece, a recent piece off of Snowden revelations, headlined "NSA Seeks to Build Quantum Computer That Could Crack Most Types of Encryption." You can link to that piece at our website, onpointradio.org. Stephen Rich, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what exactly did you see in the documents on this point that Snowden has released?
We saw a lot of investment into quantum technologies and trying to figure out mainly how they could get to a quantum computer large enough to be able to break cryptography, not only to intercept foreign governments' communications, but also to protect its own data.
You've just come out with this report. Was this from a new release from Snowden, or was this buried in reams of material he's earlier released?
I believe that it was buried in reams of from an earlier release, but I don't get to see the data or the documents directly.
What do you know then about the nature of the NSA effort to build this kind of quantum computer?
I think it shouldn't be surprising that they are building a quantum computer, but we know now that they're not ostensibly closer than the rest of the open scientific world to building one.
That's their own assessment. That you said they're neck and neck with public efforts to do this.
Right. They didn't assess themselves as that. We looked at where they were and consulted with experts to figure out where that would be in terms of everyone else.
How serious does their effort look on this front? They've been extremely serious on many other fronts in going after encryption. What about here?
We should believe that they're pretty serious about getting it. The first country to get it will obviously not tell anyone because they'll be able to break into a lot of different encryptions. But once someone comes up with a quantum computer that can break encryption, people will just likely switch off of it. So it's important that to them that they are the first ones to get there.
It's a huge advantage if you can pull it off. You describe them doing this research in these big shielded rooms called Faraday cages. What are those?
Mm-hmm. They are designed to keep electromagnetism in or out. Because quantum computers are very, very delicate, any sort of interference like electromagnetic waves could make the computer not have the quantum capabilities that it would otherwise.
So it's not a security cage. In other words, it's to keep its work pure. On site.
Right. It's for delicacy, not to keep prying eyes from seeing it.
Is it the EU's working on this? Swiss government's working on this. I'm sure there are many others. We're going to talk to some right here in the U.S. working on this. Is there any indication that the NSA, I mean, they go after so many things. Are they going after the research of others openly, contractually, or secretly?
Well, the NSA wants to know where everyone stands on it, and they benefit from all the open research that's out in the world to know where everyone is and where the developments have come. But they also conduct their own classified and secret research on the subject, which is still largely unknown.
It's part of a program titled Penetrating Hard Targets. If they achieve this, is anything a hard target anymore when it comes to scooping up information, Stephen?
Not currently. Most encryption, including almost all of public key encryption, would be broken, which would mean all of pretty much all of your secure traffic on the internet they'd be able to decrypt. But there are some technologies out there that would be useful, cryptography that is, against quantum computer attacks. But they are sort of in the early stages of development, I believe.
So this is, I mean, you think about what's encrypted. There's so many things, medical records and all of our web traffic and internet chats and, research, trade secrets. What's the NSA after here? Do they want to be able to look at anything, anytime, anywhere? Is that the goal?
I think their overarching goal is more to protect their own state secrets from anyone else who could possibly attack them with a quantum computer. But they do want to be able to, according to the documents, eavesdrop on foreign governments.
And is there the sense that this is an kind of, I guess you're alluding to this, but an arms race, that someone's going to do it, so they want it to be them?
Yes. If anybody's going to have it, they absolutely want it to be them, because if they have it and no one else knows that they have it, then they can decrypt conversations close to real time. I mean, no one's really sure how quickly they could decrypt them, but it would be incredibly advantageous for them to have this computer before anyone and for no one to know about it.
In this released information from Snowden, any indication of time frame for this? You report steady progress, little prospect of an immediate breakthrough. Any time frame indicated?
No, but that's mostly because no one really knows when or even if a large enough scale quantum computer could be built to break encryption. It's still largely theory, and based on experts that I talked to, it's probably at the very least 5 years out, at the very least.
That's not so very long. Stephen Rich is with the Washington Post, database editor there. He was a co-author of the story describing all this from Snowden leaked material. Stephen Rich in Washington, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go right to somebody who knows a lot about quantum computing. Joining us now from Vieques, Puerto Rico, Seth Lloyd, professor of quantum mechanical engineering at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He's in Puerto Rico attending a conference on the physics of information. Seth Lloyd, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So Stephen Rich has been reporting on the leaks from Snowden. He says the question stands, we don't know when or if you can build a quantum computing power large enough to break encryption on this kind of scale. You're in the midst of it. Do you think it can be done? And if so, when?
It certainly is compatible with the laws of physics. And by the dictum that anything that can happen will, then I think it will at some point be done. But predicting when is hard. The problems are very difficult. To build a quantum computer, you have to store bits of information at the scale of individual quanta, individual atoms, individual photons. This is a daunting task. This is storing and processing information at a scale that's much smaller and more precise and more delicate than people have ever done before. People have been working on it for 15 years now to build prototype quantum computers, and the current existing quantum computers, at least the ones that I know about, are consist of only a few dozen quantum bits and are far away from being able to crack codes.
Seth, were you surprised to hear that the NSA is in the game, that they're seriously pursuing this capacity themselves?
No, I was not surprised, because back in 1995, when it became clear that quantum computers could, in fact, break public key cryptosystems, I was at the first meeting in Washington to discuss government funding for quantum computing. And a representative from the NSA stood up and said, I am authorized to tell you that the NSA is interested in quantum computing. And then he sat down and everyone said, oh my goodness, because nobody from the NSA had ever said anything to them before. And so the response was so great that he stood up again and said, I believe I'm also authorized to tell you this. Of course the NSA is interested in quantum computing. And frankly, because our main goal is to protect the security of the United States, we would actually prefer that a quantum computer not be possible to build. However, if it is possible to build, we want to have the first one.
Wow. Wow. What an interesting statement. In this Washington Post report, Seth, they said the NSA appears to regard itself as running neck and neck with quantum computing labs sponsored by the EU and the Swiss government. What about other efforts in the United States? Are you doing it? Are other universities doing it? Or does the NSA own your research?
I am not funded by the NSA. But I'm very aware of the quantum computing efforts around the world. I would say that for the first 10 years, from 1995 to 2005, most of the most powerful quantum computers, prototype quantum computers, were being built in the United States. However, the European Union in particular has had a very large funding effort for quantum computing research, and I would say now indeed that the efforts are neck and neck around the world.
Why? Does that mean that the United States' primary effort is now the NSA effort?
Oh, no, not at all. Building a quantum computer is, at the moment, it's still really at the kind of fundamental physics level, investigating the phenomena and constructing the microscopic systems we need in order to manipulate information at this scale. And so we have some amazing scientists in the United States who are doing this. For example, Dave Wineland at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who won the Nobel Prize the year mm-hmm. before last, is one of the pioneers of quantum computing efforts. He has a remarkable effort. John Martinez at Santa Barbara has a fantastic effort. There are many publicly funded and completely open quantum computing researches going on in the United States. And they have very powerful systems and have been making a series of breakthroughs that indicate that we should be doing pretty well over the next 5 to 10 years.
Seth Lloyd of MIT, please stand by there in Puerto Rico. We want to learn a lot more about quantum computing itself and its implications for privacy, encryption, cryptography. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about quantum computing, the NSA, and the future of, for your eyes only, cryptography. Behind me right there, a musical representation of the algorithm a quantum computer could use to factor large numbers and crack a cryptographic key. That one composed by quantum physicist Hendrik Weimer at Harvard. Each address for a quantum bit assigned there a particular musical note. Sounds simple, but there is a lot of power in the air. The NSA is trying to harness it. You can join our conversation this hour. What if there was a computer out there that could break any encryption, any code? What if nothing online could be kept secret anymore? What if the NSA owned that computer? Are we looking at the end of effective cryptography? Will all our private information be naked, exposed? Cryptographer Matthew Green will join us in a moment. We've got questions already here in caller Seth for you. Christopher's calling from Calabasas, California. Christopher, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom. I read an article recently that said that the record for holding the quantum state, I think it was 3 seconds at minus 273 degrees or something like that. And it now is at 39 minutes at room temperature, which seems to be an astronomical, I mean, just astonishing improvement. It would seem to indicate that the availability of this may be more imminent than people are suggesting.
Let's take it right to Seth Lloyd, Christopher. I appreciate your call. Seth, how about those numbers, and what do they mean for we lay people, the significance of how long you can hold a quantum state at what temperature?
It's very significant. So the technology for this new development is you embed a phosphorus atom in silicon, and then you store a quantum bit in the internal states of the phosphorus atom. The fact that it can be stored for 37 minutes at room temperature is a truly stunning advance, and that really suggests that quantum computation, maybe not with this particular technology, but with other technologies, has a chance to get where it's going faster than one might have otherwise anticipated.
Take us back to some of the fundamentals here of quantum mechanics and quantum computing. Compared to classical computing that we all use every day, what's the difference and its implications for encryption?
So quantum computers, as their name suggests, are computers that store information at the quantum level on individual atoms, for instance, or on individual electrons. And the main thing to remember about quantum mechanics is that it's weird. I think the technical definition is funky.
Yeah. Okay.
An ordinary bit in a classical computer is registered by a whole bunch of electrons over here. We call that a zero. Whole bunch of electrons over there, we call that a one. Now, a bit in a classical computer, the electrons are either here or there. So the bit is either zero or one.
Yep.
Now, in a quantum computer, if you store a quantum bit or qubit on a single electron, one of the primary funkinesses of quantum mechanics is that the electron can be here and there at the same time. Don't ask me what that means because I don't understand it either. I just know that it's true. You just got to suck it up.
Okay.
So if you have an electron that can be here and there at the same time, it means your quantum bit can be 0 and 1 at the same time. And that means that a quantum computer can do two things at once, this and that simultaneously. And if you have multiple bits, it can do many, many things simultaneously. A quantum computer with 300 qubits could do more things than there are elementary particles in the universe at once. That's where the peculiar power of quantum computation comes in.
So that would put supercomputing on a whole new plane.
Yeah, maybe super-duper computing.
And what are the implications for encryption? How does that capacity, that almost unimaginable capacity, meet cryptography?
So public key cryptosystems, the prevailing one called RSA, Rivest, Shamir, and Edelman, works by having a public key that is sent to the person who wants to send the information. Like if I want to buy something over the internet, say green coffee beans from Sweet Maria's, then Sweet Maria sends me this public key, and I use the public key to encrypt my credit card information. And only someone who has the private key can decrypt it. Now in this case, the public key is a very large number, which is the product of two smaller prime numbers. And the private key is the two prime numbers themselves. So it turns out that nobody really knows a way, when given the product of two big prime numbers, to figure out what those prime numbers are.
Yep.
However, with a quantum computer, you can effectively explore all these possibilities in this kind of quantum parallel fashion and put them together in a way that reveals the private key.
There was a time when people talked about this as being decades away. Not so now. What about a time frame here, Seth?
Well, predicting technology is a mug's game.
Yeah.
There was a time when people talked about our fusion power being just a year or two away.
Yeah, sure.
But we are making steady progress, and by we, I should say, my experimental colleagues from around the world, in making larger and larger quantum computers. I mean, there is a kind of inexorable progress into making things more precise, more accurate, and more sensitive in our society, as the example of going from the world record for a qubit being 3 seconds at 4 degrees Kelvin to 37 minutes at room temperature shows. So, and we have the basic pieces in place. I think we're almost at the point where building a quantum computer really becomes not so much a fundamental physics problem as a quantum engineering problem.
We're talking about cryptography implications today, NSA and spying. We're going to look more at that, much more in just a second, but I don't want to be entirely security-obsessed. What other kinds of applications? How else might quantum computing change our lives, our world?
Yeah, so actually quantum computers, because of this ability to do things in quantum parallel, have quite a lot of possible applications. They can search through databases more rapidly than a classical computer could. And in fact, you could also do the kind of machine learning tasks that, in fact, the NSA is presumably doing on our phone records to look for patterns in this data. You could do those kinds of tasks much, 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 much faster than you could on a classical computer. And these are the kind of tasks that everybody uses all the time. In fact, when other intrusive entities like Google and Amazon go and troll through our email to try to sell us stuff, they are, in fact, applying these kinds of machine learning tasks to figure out, do we really want to have this kind of razor or this kind of stereo?
So are you saying it would just be the kinds of things we're familiar with just faster, or do a little sci-fi with us here? You know, put us in that world where it's quantum computing, not just in NSA hands or the EU or Switzerland or yours at MIT, but all over the place one day.
Sure. I mean, so there are these other kinds of tasks are ubiquitous. So you could take, computers basically do simple, basic things, but they do them really, really fast. And that's mm-hmm. why we live in this world where computers are doing all kinds of things for us that we're too lazy to do ourselves, for which I am thankful. And quantum computers could also take a load off of our hands by solving problems, organizing our ideas, organizing our data in ways that would not be possible classically. For me, as a scientist and a quantum engineer, the most interesting applications of quantum computation are actually to try to understand the universe as a whole, because Richard Feynman, the Nobel laureate, back in 1982 actually showed that if we could build even a modest-scale quantum computer, it would give us much, much more power for understanding what happens, for instance, in those hot quantum moments at the early universe.
I hate to take it from the universe as a whole down to something so mean or mundane, but what about your credit card, Seth? If this is out there, can you still buy something at Amazon.com, or are all bets off because we'd just be naked online? No encryption would work.
Well, so quantum information not only provides a problem, it would be a disruptive technology, but it does provide some solutions. So one of the features of quantum mechanics is it allows you to send information in a fashion that is provably secure, guaranteed by the laws of physics. This is called quantum cryptography. If things get bad enough in the with people breaking our credit card codes, then we actually have the wherewithal to use quantum mechanics for the positive part of ensuring that our credit card numbers are not taken up by a bunch of thieves from someplace else in the world.
So maybe we're just on a new field. Eric in Marlborough, Vermont. Eric, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So quantum computers can break our current encryption, but what about using them to make encryption, to encrypt stuff?
Can it work both ways? I think Seth Lloyd is suggesting that it could. Let us pick that up, Eric. Thank you. Seth, stand by in Puerto Rico. I want to go right now to Baltimore. And Matthew Green, cryptographer, research professor at Johns Hopkins University. He blogs at A Few Thoughts on Cryptographic Engineering. Matthew Green, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, it's nice to meet you.
Is this a big deal or just an elevation of the arms race if and when? And I know that's a big if and a huge when we get onto this field. Is cryptography gone or just mutates up, escalates?
Well, it's not gone, but it's very bad news for most of the cryptography we use today. And the reason is that while quantum computers don't break every cryptographic algorithm we use, they do break almost every public key algorithm. And public key cryptography is used all over the place. Every time you make a secure web connection from your web browser to Amazon.com, you're using public key cryptography. Financial transactions, it's used everywhere. By breaking it, you not only break the transactions we make in 20 years when somebody does have a practical quantum computer, but you potentially break the ones we're making right now if somebody stores those encrypted connections.
So would it be utter mayhem if in some period, Seth Lloyd says eventually you'll have quanta encryption as well, but if for some period the NSA or anybody else had quantum computing applied to this field and everybody else didn't have it, maybe didn't even know they had it?
It would be a big disaster, and obviously it depends what they decided to do with that. That's probably the biggest pro in terms of the NSA pursuing this research, is that the NSA has a lot of money, they have a lot of resources, and if they're not making, if they don't have quantum computers today, then we can all knock on wood and hope that means nobody else does either.
You wrote on your blog back in September when we had an earlier round of revelations. You said, I was totally unprepared for today's bombshell revelations describing the NSA's efforts to defeat encryption. Not only does the worst possible hypothetical I discussed appear to be true, but it's true on a scale I couldn't even imagine. What about this latest business on quantum computing? Here's yet another sort of continent laid out before us. What's your reaction?
Well, again, my reaction is that I think this is good news. So we have some news in here that they are making progress. Clearly, they're trying to go after this new kind of computing. But the great news is that it could have gone a very different way. We could have had a leak that says we have a gigantic working quantum computer running Shor's algorithm and breaking RSA sitting down next to BWI Airport.
Yeah,
And so the good news is we don't have that. And so we can all You know, thank our lucky stars that that's not the case. The bad news, in a sense, is that we know that there is now a clock, and that clock is ticking a little bit faster than we thought it was. We need to start taking steps today to make ourselves secure against those computers that might come tomorrow.
Bill in Boston, thank you for calling, Bill. You're on the air with Matthew Green and Seth Lloyd.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm wondering what your panel might think of the constitutional aspects of what the discussion is about today. I realize that most of the panel is discussing the technological aspects of quantum computing, but I'm an attorney, and it's a little troubling to think that the NSA or any other government entity would be able to virtually see everything that all of us do anytime, from the books we buy to emails we send to anything that we do that involves any transaction that we think is secure.
Yeah.
Over the internet. And I think that George Orwell would shudder if he heard that this kind of computing technology is possible, and that you know, the NSA could use it for purposes which would clearly violate the Fourth Amendment expectation of privacy without probable cause and supporting documentation. It just seems scary that this technology could be used to virtually look at everything that all of us do on our computers.
Anytime. Yeah, thank you, Bill. I mean, maybe even beyond the prodigious imagination of George Orwell, certainly beyond the imagination one would think of the drafters of the Constitution. I mean, Matthew, what about it? Is this technology, hypothetically, just leaping beyond? There would not even exactly be a wall here. If this quantum computing could just look right through, everything's there. What about the Constitution, guarantees, privacy, the rest?
Well, I think we've learned that there are already things going on right now that the NSA is taking advantage of a lot of data that's not even being encrypted. They were tapping lines between Google data centers and collecting private information. There have been big scandals over this, so we know that the NSA is very interested in doing that kind of thing. And a lot of people have concerns about it because, at least here in the United States, ostensibly we have a legal process. We have foreign intelligence courts that are supposed to control what data they have access to and make sure that there's, you know, no kind of dragnet surveillance against Americans. With this technology, there would really be very little online we could do to protect ourselves. And if the NSA was not legally constrained, they could see everything.
Seth Lloyd, can you have quantum computing, effective, powerful, full-on quantum computing, and some semblance of privacy? How would you have both those, Seth?
Well, let me also just comment about the point of the question. I mean, many people in this world have really given up a lot of privacy already. At least the NSA is trying to protect us. At least the NSA is trying to protect us. I mean, I guarantee you that out there someday, some terrorist is looking at his computer screen and there's a pop-up window that's come up that said, "You just bought 2,000 pounds of this fertilizer."
Right,
people
right.
Who bought this, try right. This detonator.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
So which, of course, the NSA is not our only problem in privacy these days.
But the presumption in the Constitution is that even those who are tasked to protect us would have to respect our privacy. And with this technology, that's not clear to me.
Right. I agree. So, and it's clear from the revelations, both these recent ones about quantum computing and maybe the more disturbing ones about the extent to which the NSA has gone in order to break existing systems and get backdoors in, that our privacy has been seriously compromised. I think that quantum computing could provide us, and indeed the NSA, with a better way to do this. For example, what I was describing earlier, these quantum machine learning algorithms that allow you to access large amounts of data and find patterns, one of the features of these algorithms is that you could find the patterns but never know the data. So, for instance, if the NSA is trolling through a gigantic database containing Avogadro's numbers of bits, a billion,
yeah.
billion bits, and trying to find patterns, you know, that indicate terrorist activity, if you present it to them in a quantum form, then they could find the patterns but never have access to the individual records.
We're in metadata on a whole new level there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about quantum computing, the NSA, and the future of, for your eyes only, cryptography. Seth Lloyd is with us, professor of quantum mechanical engineering at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, joining us today from a conference on the physics of information in Puerto Rico, and talking Avogadro's numbers of bits here. Matthew Green is a cryptographer and research professor at Johns Hopkins University, blogs at A Few Thoughts on Cryptographic Engineering. Steve in Belmont, Massachusetts, you're on with Seth Lloyd and Matthew Green. Thanks for calling, Steve.
Sure. Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So this is sort of a less dire kind of inquiry, but I find this whole thing fascinating. I'm a physician, a child psychiatrist, and work at Mass General Hospital.
Great.
One of the places I think this could really be helpful is I feel like there's patterns everywhere in medicine,
yes,
that we can't quite get our hands around, especially in the ICU, for example, but also in what I do. And if we had a mechanism that could detect those patterns more accurately and then be proactive, allow us to predict the onset of, say, something bad that we're otherwise reacting to, mm-hmm, we could get ahead of a lot of these diseases that we're always trying to treat after they've already gotten bad.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if that's a mechanism that the guests have thought about or have used in, things like bioinformatics.
It's a great question, Steve. Thank you for raising it. And if I may, Seth Lloyd, I'm going to bring it to you, and I'm going to package it with one from online as well. DJ says, here's Steve asking about medical applications and pattern recognition. DJ maybe takes it a step further, says, my big question is, with the increased power and speed of quantum computing, would this be the most critical step towards true AI, artificial intelligence? Seth, take those on.
Yeah, so I'll try both. So the first one, I think, is a great question, and also relates to the privacy issue. So let's consider a hypothetical database which may someday in the not-distant future be there. It's the database that contains the information about all the genomes of every human being on Earth,
mm-hmm,
right? So
okay,
there are tens of billions of people, and each gene has almost 10 billion bits of information. So this, in fact, is one of these Avogadro's number databases. It has as many bits as there are atoms in a
vast beyond vastness. Yeah.
So that's a database we'd really like to find out what things are going on in there by, for instance, comparing different markers for different diseases. On the other hand, it's a database for which we'd like to have as much privacy as possible. I'm a little uncomfortable with my insurance company knowing what's in my genome.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum computation holds out the promise, if we could build a big enough one, of actually analyzing this information and getting these kinds of patterns, which we desperately need in order to improve people's health, while at the same time guaranteeing people's privacy.
Are we talking sort of Star Trek eons away again, or?
Interestingly, these kinds of machine learning algorithms for big quantum data, as I call it, these are in some sense easier than factoring large numbers. So these kinds of applications might be done with a significantly smaller quantum computer than you require to break codes and cryptosystems, and these would be a lot closer, I think.
And DJ's AI question, Steve or Seth?
Well, let's be realistic. From this conference in Puerto Rico, where we just had a session on consciousness, I think that natural intelligence is already pretty hard to find.
Great.
Constructing artificial intelligence is difficult as well. I'm not sure that that quantum computers, the kinds of things that they can do, necessarily will give us a quantum consciousness anytime soon. But they do provide a different method for trying to analyze what's going on in things like biological systems at the level of brains and neurons. So maybe they'll give us some help.
Let's go to Carl in Furman, South Carolina. Carl, you're on.
Yeah, my question was, if a computer can take and source all that information,
yeah,
and learn all that, couldn't it just wipe us out?
What do you mean by wipe us out, Carl? What do you mean?
Just take us out of the question. It could destroy us. Take over all the nuclear facilities, everything. Just get rid of humans because it's smarter than us and it wants to rule.
Well, okay. I don't know. Matthew, you're concerned with cryptography, Matthew. Here's Carl. He's concerned with everything. We're the new peons.
I'm not sure what to say to that one, except that I'm really hopeful that if we ever develop a computer that powerful, we will not hook it up to our nuclear weapon systems. But, of course, we probably will, so not too optimistic.
Carl wonders if it'll hook itself up. Let's go to Pete. Pete in New Haven, Connecticut. Pete, you're on.
Hi, guys. How are you? I like this topic. One thing I have to say is that when the people of this world get sick of their governments and they want to turn on them and they know that the government has something like this planned, can you just imagine all the people as a revolutionary kind of move, sending false emails, sending false texts, sending false transactions to have them completely go bonkers and investigate every single one? What would happen?
But what a waste of time, Pete, if we're all reduced to that, spending our time sending out false spews of data? I mean,
But there's got to be a point where the people have enough of this, and there's got to be a point where the people make a move. So I'm saying that the government should get a taste of its own medicine.
Yeah, we got it. The people make a move. Matthew, there's lots of response like this here. I mean, we have some people who are saying, look, I don't do anything wrong. I can be transparent, and it doesn't bother me. We've got a lot of others saying, you know, just kind of ready to jump overboard with this. You know, here's Charles says, the only way to restore any semblance of privacy is to get off the grid entirely. Megan says, it's clear there's no backing out. This is on Facebook. Many are reacting by cutting ties with social media, reverting technologically. If you don't stay abreast of tactics used to collect data or have a working knowledge, you're making yourself vulnerable. So maybe one day there will be quantum cryptography, but until that day comes, if we should, the NSA or anybody else gets on this front, Matthew, what are the options?
Well, I mean, I think that the thing that I've been advocating and a lot of other people have been advocating is that we need to start using the encryption that we have much more broadly. I mean, the biggest problem we have today is not that the NSA is going to break our crypto with a quantum computer. It's that a lot of the stuff you're sending over the internet just isn't encrypted, period. So it's trivial. In fact, the NSA was recently, there was a leak that said they were collecting 500,000 address book records a day from people who weren't even encrypting them because their software wasn't doing that. So quantum computers aren't the threat, but definitely data collection is. So if we can get to the point where we're encrypting that data, it will probably be more effective against the NSA than sending out false data. And then the question is, from an engineering point of view, how do we put in place the post-quantum algorithms that can keep that data safe even when quantum computers are available? And that's a big challenge.
Yeah, it just kind of reduces me to speechlessness, the scale of this. I don't know, Seth, in everyday research that's going on now, I'm sure you'll lose us here in a hurry, but what's the next problem? What's the next bump in the road in getting toward quantum computing?
Well, so I think the good news about this is that quantum cryptography, which is, a provably secure system based on the laws of physics, exists. There are commercial quantum cryptographic companies out there. Currently, the systems are only being bought by people like governments and banks who want extra secure encryption, and it doesn't work so well for public key encryption, so it doesn't solve that problem. I would actually say that in fact, what would really we should in the quantum information community be focusing on is perhaps trying to come up with a public key version of these quantum cryptographic methods so that we could have our our public key cryptography guaranteed by the laws of physics rather than just guaranteed by it being difficult to break.
That sounds pretty good. David in Woodbury, Connecticut. David, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hello.
I was asking per second or even per billionth of a second, in terms of numbers of quadrillion, quintillion, septillion, octillion, dectillion, how many bits of information per second, say, can be stored? Or if you have to do per, you know, billionth of a second?
Yeah, the capacity or potential capacity. Seth Lloyd, how big, how much, how fast?
Well, we are in the midst of this tremendous expansion of computing power, summarized by Moore's Law, where the power, the memory space and speed of computers grows by a factor of 2 every year and a half or so. If we keep on this pace for another 350 years, the entire universe will be one gigantic computer storing 10 to the 120 bits and be able to perform 10 to the 120 ops. I don't see it progressing much beyond that, though, in the near future.
Here's a question. I mean, that seems pretty big in itself.
It's big, but it's finite.
Okay, in the sense that the universe is maybe finite. I don't. But here, Third Way says, let's calm down a little bit here. Writing to us online, writes, these quantum computing systems do not have large degrees of freedom that are controllable and reliable. It's a purely quantum engineering problem. Whatever the quantum dynamics involved, you have to interact with the device classically to put your input strings into the system and read off the output of the device. Third way is asking here, are the people in this field completely blind to this? Says, let's have this conversation in another decade or two. Settle down, folks, says our listener, Seth. What do you say?
Well, I mean, we're blind to lots of stuff, but not to that. Yeah, I mean, indeed, quantum computers are hard to build. And in order to build, we're far away from building the kinds of quantum computers that would strike fear into the hearts of the NSA and other three-letter agencies. We have to be able to control these systems to a very high degree of precision. We have to, perhaps more daunting, because actually there's lots of very high precision control out there. We have to string together a very large number of quantum bits and then control very large numbers of them. And indeed, we have to get the information in and get the information out. So, but I don't think we need to wait for 10 years to have this conversation. These are techniques that are being developed right now. In fact, 10 years down the line, we're going to have much more powerful quantum computers that are able to process much larger amounts of information.
I want to bring this back to the NSA, but of course it's so much bigger than that that it keeps tugging us. Karen in Weston, Massachusetts. Karen, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Just quickly, I wanted to ask, you know, we've been hearing callers worry about the spying on, you know, through the current computers, et cetera, and the Internet.
Yeah.
But aren't we talking about a revolution that's going to change computing as we even know it? We won't know in even 2 years, it sounds like, the way computers are structured. It won't be the same.
I don't know if it's as soon as that, but I guess, Seth, it certainly is a revolution that you're working on.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, again, I think that I agree with Matthew that the real problems in the world right now are not really these quantum problems. And there's some good news about this, right? I mean, it's no secret that the world is awash in data, and the amount of data that's out there is growing at least as fast as Moore's Law. It's certainly doubling a lot faster than every year and a half. So in some sense, you have to have pity on these poor men and women at NSA working for their country, trying to find these needles that can protect us in a haystack that's growing by a factor of two every 6 months.
Yeah, you can see why they're on it, and they are on it. Josh in New York, Plattsburgh, New York. Josh, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, Tom. I just want to really quickly make the point that at one point the Internet was a military creation and eventually was privatized. And I'd like people to think what their life would be like without that. Quantum computing, developed by the military, it sounds scary, but give it a few years, and when it's privatized and it's in our daily lives, we won't be able to consider life without it, I imagine.
Ah, you're an open-minded man, a wide thinker there. I like that. Matthew Green, how about it? If there's a race on here, lots of people working on this, does it matter to you as a cryptographer? Let's just take it from that angle first. Who gets there first? Would you prefer the NSA to get there first with its covert, now revealed program through Edward Snowden, or would you rather have it some more publicly funded and transparent institution get there first? Matthew, are you there, my friend? Well, let's see if I can put that to Seth. Did you get that question? Can I put that to you?
I did. Actually, one of the revelations from this data was that it really, for a long time, people in my community were asking, well, the NSA is funding quantum computing, and they're funding it at quite a high level, but it could be just a level to be a smokescreen to cover up the fact they can already break all these codes. But I think now we know that that's not true. And, well, I don't know, but it seems like that's not true from these recent revelations. And now if you look at the quantum computers that are being built around the world, there's a lot of these efforts, people working very hard, and the great majority of them, including in the United States, are publicly funded efforts or privately funded ones like D-Wave in Canada, and or public-private, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I think at the moment it looks like, you know, if a quantum computer is out there, if the NSA gets one first, some kind of publicly traded company will not be far behind.
Matthew Green, same question to you. I lost you there for a moment, but as a cryptographer, do you care if this breakthrough is going to be made? Would you rather see it made by the NSA or by some more transparent institution?
So I am the example that was brought up was the Internet, which was developed by the Defense Department, but it was developed in a very different way. It was not a covert invention. It was very public, and it was done through universities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of development is the right way to do it. That's the way I'd like to see it done. But again, I'd rather even a secret development at the NSA, perhaps, than somewhere else.
Are there cryptographers already on the inside of the quantum computing community thinking about cryptography on that side of things?
Absolutely. There is an entire field which is called post-quantum cryptography. And, of course, it's all theoretical now. The idea is to come up with algorithms that are secure even after quantum computers come along. And like I said before, that's an important problem because the cryptography that we're – the encrypted messages we're sending today – may stick around for 20 more years until they're then cracked by a quantum computer. So having these algorithms soon is something we should start thinking about today.
Do you imagine some kind of interim period where somebody gets the capacity to break all the cryptography, but the new generation of cryptography is not in place yet, and we're all in some kind of Dante's hell of fiery nakedness? What do you think, Matt?
So I think that we have enough techniques now. They're not great techniques. They're not what I want to be using. But we have enough techniques now that for the foreseeable future, more likely we'll be able to take half steps to stop the problem before the quantum computers that can break the crypto are in place.
Well, we're sort of comforted. And I think more than that, we're just dismayed and amazed by this conversation. Just to glimpse what's going on in the world as we lead our little lives. Pretty amazing. Very grateful to the two of you for helping us do that. Matthew Green, cryptographer, research professor at Johns Hopkins University, blogging at A Few Thoughts on Cryptographic Engineering. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us today from Baltimore.
Thank you.
And Seth Lloyd, professor of quantum mechanical engineering at MIT, joining us from Vieques in Puerto Rico today. Enjoy, Seth. We envy you, but thanks for being with us.
It's been fun, Tom.
Really fun here, too. Thank you so much. Listeners, thanks for joining us. Good luck to us all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.